Three friends die in a car crash and they go to heaven. They're all asked, when you're in your coffin and your friends and your family are mourning you, what would you like to hear them say? The first lady says, Alan already knows this one. The first lady says, I would like to hear them say that I was a great doctor of my time and a loving family member. The second lady says, I would like to hear that I was a wonderful and loving wife, and as a school teacher I made a huge difference to the lives of my pupils. And the last lady replies, I'd like to hear them say, she's moving! Today we continue our series looking at Mark's Gospel. It's called Seeing Jesus. Mark knew who Jesus was, and so he recorded some of the events of Jesus' life which he felt would best show other people who Jesus is. Last week, we saw how Jesus calmed a raging storm with some words. And this week, we will see how Jesus cast out a legion of demons from a man. As an aside, a Roman legion had at least 5,000 soldiers in it, sometimes up to 6,000. So the implication is that this man, it wasn't just two or three, this was a lot. And now perhaps when it gets to the bits in the Bible that deal with demons, you might think it's more myth, more movie, more make-believe than real events. Some people might say this is a story that was made up by Jesus' disciples to show how powerful he was. Some people have said that in Jesus' day, people blamed demons for illnesses that they didn't understand. And there are some occasions in the New Testament where it does seem to suggest that that's the case. But here, this seems a little different. We are so clever with our science and our technology and our medicine, and they were primitive and didn't understand. Or did they? Perhaps the advances in science, which have made such a difference to the world, have also changed us. I've always felt it's an irony that the science that is supposed to be about open-minded pursuit of the truth closes our minds to things which seem to be beyond the truth. You see, what if there's something more than all this stuff? Exploring and explaining this stuff is and how it works, that's what science is for. But as soon as it starts trying to make statements about stuff beyond that, it's wrong. It's outside the bounds of what it's for. Science is very good at explaining why the sun comes up every morning. Turns out the sun doesn't come up every morning. We come up every morning on the sun. Science is very good at explaining those sorts of things. But this sort of thing is completely beyond the stuff that science can talk about. If you believe that all there is is what you see around you, then the events of this will perhaps seem like a sci-fi show or a movie. I don't know if any of you have seen The Exorcist. I never have. I'm not sure I particularly want to. If that's you, I would like respectfully to disagree, but also to ask you perhaps to open your mind. Just explore whether this might actually be true as we look at Mark 5 together. If you want to open your Bibles, I think it's page 709. Yep, page 709. It's Mark chapter 5, and we're beginning at verse 1. As happens time and again in Mark, the passage begins and ends, in fact, with Jesus in a boat. Jesus was often in a boat. And in fact, it's the same boat that he was in last week, because these events happen immediately after Jesus calms the storm. It's probably the next morning. Now, we aren't sure where this place is that Mark is talking about. There are about three or four places in the region with very similar names. And we're not sure which one, but that's not really the point. See, the first point is that this happened immediately after Jesus calmed the storm. And the second point is that this isn't happening in Israel. It's happening on the other side of the lake in non-Jewish or Gentile country. In other words, this is not the people of God. And yet still Jesus is going to them. Mark tells us three things about this man who came and came to him. And the first thing, in verse 3, he lived in the tombs. These were sort of cave tombs. And they weren't large. They were sort of low. So he wouldn't have been able to stand up in these tombs. And of course, they were full of dead people. And when you have somewhere that's full of dead people, it sort of smells, I'm afraid. So the first thing we know about this man is that he didn't smell very nice because he lived amongst the tombs. He lived right on the edge of society. In fact, he lived beyond the edge of society. The second thing Mark tells us about this man is that he was freakishly strong. Look in verse 4. He'd often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Many had tried and none had succeeded. The implication, of course, Mark doesn't spell it out for us. The implication is that this legion of demons is giving him superhuman strength, that he's able to do things that normal human beings are not in terms of strength. And the third thing Mark tells us about this man is that he led a pretty lonely and wretched existence. Verse 5, night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. This poor man was tormented and distressed. His pain was real and it was going completely unnoticed. The people of the villages knew he was there, but no one wanted to be near him. And so his pain was unnoticed. There was no one there to listen. I wonder how much pain there is in Amington, where there is no one to listen. Now I wonder what you would do if a bruised and bloody man, stinking to high heaven of decomposing bodies, with wild hair, probably wild beard, and wild eyes, shouting and screaming. I wonder what you'd do if someone like that ran up to you and threw themselves on the floor in front of you. Probably something like this. And hope he didn't notice you slip away quietly. At least that's probably how I would react. As it's probably a good job that he didn't do this to me, he did it to Jesus. Because Jesus didn't run away. Hello. Jesus didn't run away. In fact, Jesus said, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." It's in verse 8. Mark tells us the story in a slightly funny order. But the first thing Jesus says to the man in verse 8, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." And then the spirit goes a bit mental. This legion of spirits inside Jesus start yelling and shouting at the top of his voice. Verse 7, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." This guy, he went crazy. Now, some people suggest that the demons were trying to name Jesus to try and get power over him. But actually, I think they were desperate. I think they couldn't help it because they knew their number was up. They knew who Jesus was in a way that the humans around him, no one had realized yet who Jesus was quite yet. No one knew he was the Son of the Most High God. But the demons knew. And in fact, this is the second time in Mark's Gospel that a demon has cried. In fact, that might even be the third time that a demon has cried out, "You are the Son of God." They knew who he was and they knew their number was up. It's very interesting, if you remember, way back in whenever it was, probably October, when we were looking at Mark chapter 3, Jesus tells a parable about how a strong man needs to be tied up before you can plunder his property. Do you remember that parable? Some of you do. Well, Jesus was talking about how he had come to break people free from the power of Satan. And so here, just a couple of chapters later, we quite literally have a strong man. This poor guy, oppressed by demons, and Jesus had come to set him free. The demons were terrified of that. And so they cried out. These demons were desperate. If you look in verse 12, the demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." They knew they couldn't stay put. They knew their time tormenting this man was up. So they don't ask Jesus if they can stay, but instead they ask to go into a herd of pigs. It's a little bit strange. I suspect they thought they could survive the watery death of the pigs. But the clear implication, I think, from what Mark is saying is that they were destroyed as the herd of pigs rushed down into the sea. But also notice the language that Mark uses. They say in verse 12, "Allow us to go into them." Verse 13, Jesus gave them permission. I don't know about you, but that language to me sounds really quite mundane. It reminds me of when I was growing up and I would say to Mum after a dinner, "Please can I get down now?" And she would give me permission. It's that sort of language. Jesus doesn't shout and scream and dance around or anything like that. His power is so absolute. He doesn't need any of that. If you remember last week, when Jesus was in the boat and the storm was raging, he didn't shout up and do a rain dance and sort of dance around and scream and shout at the waves. He just said, "Be quiet." And it stopped. This is the incredible power that Jesus had. It's no coincidence that these things happened together. And this is the first contrast that Mark wants us to see. This quiet, supreme power and authority of Jesus against the wild shouting and the histrionics of this legion of demons. It's such a contrast. But the second contrast Mark wants us to see is in the man himself. He starts out wild and screaming and shouting, and how does he end up? Verse 15. The people came from the village and they saw the man dressed and in his right mind. Like the Sea of Galilee was completely calm when Jesus spoke. So this man was at peace. And he had his dignity back. He was clothed again. Mark didn't tell us at the beginning that he was naked. But that, perhaps that's not a surprise. He was living in the tombs. He had his dignity back. He was human again. And he was at peace. This is the power of Jesus. Now, perhaps a little aside about the herd of pigs. Sometimes when we read this, we think, oh, that's a bit unethical of Jesus, isn't it? To destroy a herd of something like 2,000 pigs? Something like that. Seems a little off, doesn't it? If you like animal rights, perhaps this seems like Jesus probably wasn't going to be a member of whatever those animal rights groups are. And Mark doesn't seem to care either. But of course, you have to remember that for Jews, pigs were really, they were unclean animals. They were unholy animals. And so actually, they were the perfect home, in Jewish understanding, for some unclean spirits. But perhaps more importantly, the reason Mark doesn't seem to care about the pigs is because he cares more about this man, this child of God, who had been oppressed and driven to awful wretchedness by this legion of demons. Mark cares more that he was released from that than about the herd of pigs. And that's something that's challenged me this week. Whenever I read this, I think, oh, I wish, do you know what? I wish Jesus hadn't done that. I wish he'd just got rid of the demons and that the herd of pigs wasn't there. But that challenges me to think, why is my reaction, why did Jesus destroy the pigs instead of, wow, Jesus freed that man? What does that say about my love for my fellow man? That's something that's challenged me this week. Maybe that is a challenge for some of you as well. Why do I care? Why is my first thought about the pigs rather than, wow, this man was set free from the power of Satan? Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me, and I'll go and pray about that later. And actually, interestingly, the loss of pigs isn't why the villagers sent Jesus away. That's another assumption I think people sometimes make about this passage, but it's really important in the Bible that we actually read what it says instead of making an assumption. If you look in verse 15, to start with, the townspeople come to Jesus. They see the man who'd been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. They were afraid. They knew about this man. No doubt some of them were the ones who tried to restrain him before, put him in the irons and the chains. But they couldn't. I mean, that would be pretty scary, wouldn't it? And now, there's this man called Jesus who has completely transformed this demoniac. What power must he have? No wonder that they were a bit scared. And so they asked him to leave. They were terrified of the greater power of Jesus. And that leaves us today with a bit of a choice. Again, Mark's gospel isn't just about Mark presenting events from Jesus' life about who Jesus is. He also presents all sorts of ways that other people responded to Jesus. To beg the question to us, how do we want to respond to him? You see, the people from the town, they were terrified of Jesus' power. And what if they asked him to go? They said, we don't want anything to do with you. You scare us. Please leave. That's how they responded. But the man, verse 18, the man begged to go with Jesus. He wanted to spend time with Jesus. He wanted to be with Jesus, this man who would set him free. Jesus actually said no, but only because he had a different mission for him. And he said to the man, no, don't come with me. Go home, verse 19, to your own people and tell them what the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. And so the man goes away and he tells everyone he can find about what Jesus has done for him. And the people, verse 20, were amazed. No wonder they were amazed. And what happens in a couple of chapters, which we'll find out in a few weeks' time, the next time Jesus comes to this region, there are crowds of thousands. So many that Jesus actually has, it's one of Jesus' feeding miracles. The next time he comes to this region, he has to feed 4,000 people because the crowds were so great. And this man was the one who'd gone out telling them all. Two very different responses to Jesus and his power. I wonder how you think you might respond to Jesus. In a few moments, we're going to move into a time of healing prayer and intercessions. And like the way that Jesus spoke to the storm and to the demoniac, there won't be any histrionics. We're not going to be screaming and shouting and, I don't know, thumping you and stuff like that, whatever sort of happens. It's going to be very quiet, and it's going to be in the name of Jesus, the prayers for you. Just like Jesus' prayers. Because we believe that Jesus' power is supreme. And so if you'd like to come forward to receive prayer, we, as a church, as a healing team, are praying that you might encounter the power of Jesus. That you or the loved ones that you would like prayer for will be healed. But actually, that's a sort of secondary prayer. Because actually, my main prayer is that when you encounter the love and the power of Jesus, so instead of sending him away, you say, I want to follow you. Tell me more. I want to know more about you. That's my main prayer. But I hope that along the way you experience God's healing as well.